to brush up on my Spanish. I'm going to need some work on that. My apologies to the caller and to the listeners. I'm just not the translator that I should be. Talking about Free Radio Santa Cruz, actually, no, talking about the city council meeting coming up on the next Tuesday, 2 days after tomorrow. There's also going to be another a city council renovation project, city hall renovation. They're going to put money into sprucing up the city hall. Does that mean they're going to let people live in some of the areas, poor people perhaps, or no way? No, they just want better quarters for the offices, and they're going to be spending, it looks like, $115,000 to do that. Now, the current time, of course, they haven't considered setting up a campground for homeless people, which would make the whole Camp Paradise issue certainly much less of a sore thorn in their side, though I think it would still be a real question. But, of course, instead they're spending money on better offices for the bureaucrats, and that's item number 36.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. How you doing?
I'm good.
Can you tell me about the city council meeting and what can be spoken, please?
Can I tell you? I'm sorry. Can I tell you about what?
The city council meeting that you just spoke about.
Well, I am. Actually, I've been talking about it for the last hour. And, you know, it's a meeting that's happening on Tuesday. It starts at 12:30 in the afternoon. And then there's one at 7 o'clock in the evening when you can talk on any subject during oral communications.
As a matter of fact, I understand that I was actually listening to your program about what the city mayor would disapprove of what you can and cannot say.
Yeah.
And I would like to help you out on that, if you don't mind. I got your back.
Well, Bud, I appreciate that. I mean, I think you should be concerned about how he treats you, because Mayor Fitzmaurice has decided that he doesn't want to hear anything that I have to say, pretty much. I think that although he is forced to allow me to speak because the law requires that people who come to the meetings be afforded a certain amount of time, but he is actually violating the law because he's trying to shrink the amount of time that I have available and let other people have longer periods of time, which is illegal.
Well, trust me, he's told you what you cannot say, but he hasn't told me anything, so that's where the loophole where I can use on against him.
Uh-huh. Well, I appreciate that, Bud.
You're back.
Well, that's very nice of you.
I'll use the word fury to see how he takes it. Trust me, I got to take care of him.
All right, well, thank you, Bud.
And I will see you at Santa Cruz Roasting.
All right.
Thank you.
And for those who want some street spirits after the show, that's the newspaper. Come on down to the Roasting Company. Should be there about 15 to 2. That's down on Pacific Avenue, the downtown Roasting Company, across from, I guess it's Starbucks or Pete's, whatever that chain store is across the street. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. I'm Robert North, and the call-in number is 427-3772. Feels like the weather is getting hotter out there, so take it all off. That's my advice. To heck with what they say. Again, on the consent agenda, the grand jury recommendations, which I wasn't able to read because that is not on the web. Some of the stuff is on the web, some are not. Fitzmaurice, the mayor, is responding to what the grand jury has recommended. I'm apologizing because I didn't get in to the grand jury my complaints about the Brown Act. I got them into court, and they're sitting kind of in an inactive file, and I got them to the public, but I didn't get them to the grand jury, which may have been a really sad error on my part, though I don't usually note the grand jury does much. When I tried to talk to them about police misconduct, they just were not interested. The city council afternoon session normally starts at 3, but on Tuesday it'll start at 12:30. There's administrative business where they're going to have a big, the item of the Santa Cruz County Conference and Visitors Council returns. That's nearly $400,000 for Charlie Canfield's Seaside Company ads and other things. We thought Cronin and Sugar were going to stand up to that. They actually, when I taunted them with that at the last council meeting, Cronin actually pulled it off the agenda. Now it's coming back. We'll see if he stands up to it. It's item 38. 39 is Beach Flats Traffic Calming Project. And that was a controversy some years ago where Mike Hernandez, the police officer's friend and pseudo-Latino, wanted to put in a traffic light, and the community kept saying no, 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 and finally the community was able to stop the traffic light at where there's now stop signs down at Barson and Ocean Streets. I'm not sure what's happening, whether that's coming back or not. Item 43 on the afternoon is the Downtown Plaza panel report, and I mentioned that already. Item 44 looks interesting. It's an accessory dwelling unit committee report. ADUs, those are like those little garages and so forth throughout the city that are being rented out. They're illegal accessory dwelling units. We've talked about this on the air because the only housing that's around is illegal, whether you're outside or inside, it begins to look like, unless you've got piles of money to pay or are very, very lucky or know people and something like that. So this is item 44. It's a motion to accept the report of the Ad Hoc Council Committee on Accessory Dwelling Units and refer a recommendation to the Planning Commission for preparation of ordinance amendments. The recommendation is... In the course of its goals discussions earlier this year, the council established an ad hoc committee consisting of council members Kennedy, Porter, and Premack to examine city policies concerning accessory dwelling units, ADUs. The committee members' stated interest was to identify steps the city might take to promote creation of more ADUs, thereby increasing the stock of affordable housing units. Over the intervening months, the committee has met with planning department staff, God help us, as well as interested affordable housing advocates, I've never even heard of this committee, to review the current regulatory framework for ADUs. The committee is focused on zoning ordinance provisions regarding permitted locations, parking, and site design requirements and development fees for ADUs. The committee will meet on Monday, July 23rd, and it doesn't tell us when, so if you want to find out, call the city clerk's office early tomorrow morning. That's tomorrow, the 23rd, if you want to go to that meeting of the accessory Council Committee on Accessory Dwellings. Let's see here, losing my way. The council is focused on zoning ordinance provisions regarding permitted locations, parking, and site design requirements and development fees. Its recommendations are not final, therefore you should be advised of that. However, here's a summary of the current regulatory framework that was being considered. In 1984, the city adopted an ordinance providing for the development of dwelling units accessory to a main single-family dwelling on a parcel of land. Since that time, these units, called ADUs, have become an important part of the city's housing stock because they've been too nearsighted or elitist to build any more housing. The 1984 ordinance was amended in 1986, 1992, 1994, and 1999. The current ordinance includes the following key points. The number of ADUs to be built is limited to 25 per year. That ain't many ADUs, folks. Affordable units are encouraged through provisions that eliminate certain fees in exchange for affordability covenants. The property owner must occupy either the primary residence or the ADU. ADUs are allowed in residential zones with lot sizes of 5,000 square feet or more. Maximum size of an ADU is 500 square feet, except when the lot exceeds 150% of the allowable lot size in that district. Height is typically limited to the height of a primary residence. The ADU may be allowed over the garage when over 50% of a house is 1.5 stories high. They may also occupy a second story of the primary residence. Units may be attached or detached. Attached ADUs have the same setback requirements as the principal residence, and there of course lies the rub, because garages are on the property line, and I think you have to be set back 5 feet from the property line, so that makes a lot of ADUs illegal. Detached units may have side and rear yards reduced to 3 feet for a one-story ADU or a 5-foot side and 10-foot rear yard setback for a two-story ADU. So there may be some modifications there. One on-site parking space is required for a studio or one-bedroom ADUs, and two spaces are required for a two-bedroom ADU. And I think that parking requirement was another sticking point that made it most ADUs illegal at the current time, or many of them. We had, discussions with Fred Geiger on this issue. We may even try to give him a call. He hasn't spoken with us since he hung up about 3 or 4 months ago, but you never can tell. Maybe he will actually pick up the phone and go for the gusto, and we'll just see about that here. We'll give him a call. Of course, we have to have a working phone line to do that. Our phone is a little bit erratic. Let's try again. We're ringing old Fred Geiger.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no...
Well, it looks like Fred is avoiding those difficult phone calls or possibly couldn't pay his phone bill, or maybe we have the wrong number. Any number of possibilities presents itself. Anyway, our phone lines are open in case you want to reach us, and the phone number here is 427-3772. 427-3772. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I was just thinking, wanted to throw in another option, is maybe he changed his number so that you would stop calling him.
Oh, don't say that.
Bye.
Actually, Fred and I haven't been exchanging much phone contact in the last few months. Fred is a man who kind of, I think, envisages himself as sort of the man in the middle, a moderate fellow who is trying to get city council to take the left track, if you will, to do the right thing, but is having some difficulty because the city council doesn't seem to want to do it. Even the much beloved council members Sugar and Crone, who were, of course, the great white hope of 1998, not to mention council member Porter, who was supposed to be the great white hope of 2000. And it seems that that hasn't panned out, and it's a problem. But in the meantime, keep up your connections with city council. It seems to be the rule, at least for a lot of folks, and they want to be effective. You see, that's the reason they want to keep up their good connections with city council. Again, I don't know. I haven't talked to Fred in a while, and I'm hoping that at some point he will come on and discuss issues. He did speak at some length on ADUs at the city council meeting, which passed some notorious changes last fall.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert Ed.
Hi, Ed.
I haven't heard you mention what's up with Jim Costner.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I was almost going to forget that. Should I tell you on the air or on the phone?
Yeah, let me on the air, okay?
Okay.
Robert.
So thanks, Ed, for calling in. Yeah, Jim Costner, some may know Jim is the man who smashed the Columbus statue quite thoroughly, pulverizing the Columbus myth, or perhaps not, but trying to do that at the San Jose City Hall back in April or March. And he went to jail, awaiting trial, made bail, got jailed again, made bail. I mean, he wasn't violating the law any more than breaking the statue, and there was some confusion about one of his court appearances, but he surrendered himself, he made the bail, and we actually talked about Jim's case at length on Sunday a week ago, and we showed how an attempt of a vindictive or ambitious district attorney, Rob Baker, to get Jim re-jailed based on a kind of a very deceptive, manipulative grand jury indictment on the same charges that he'd been charged with before, without telling Jim, the judge, or the grand jury. They made it look like they were bringing in a new charge, that he was somehow at large and had to be picked up on a warrant, when in fact the same charge had earlier been put forward by the district attorney's office, gone through numerous bail hearings. He'd made bail and it was released. So they arrested him on that Friday a week ago. We sat in the DA's offices. We sat in's a little strong. We protested. We made enough noise that they listened to us. And the judge then released Jim O.R. on his own recognizance without any bail and discharged the previous bail, saying these shenanigans by the DA were wrong. However, on Monday of this week, he went before another judge, and this judge decided to reinstitute the bail. And the problem that Jim had was that because the old bail had been released, there was a new fee of 10%, $3,500 required. I think it was actually less, but because there had been a previous bail. But he couldn't make it, hadn't expected it was going to be there, and he was taken into custody. And he is now cooling his heels in Elmwood, which is a matter of concern for some of us, because Elmwood is the place where Jim reports, he was threatened by the white supremacists, not quite clear who, but he received two death threats when he was in jail and two more phoned death threats when he was out of jail. That's according to Jim in a conversation with me yesterday or the day before from Elmwood. And he wants to get out of there because for that reason, and also because he needs to prepare his defense for a September hearing on the one charge of felony vandalism creating damage worth $400 or more. And that is quite a reduction from the previous charges, which involved burglary and felony vandalism for something costing $10,000 or more, and a hate crime enhancement because they claimed he was anti-white. All those have been dropped in favor of this minor charge, or should we say less major charge. They're still trying to make it a felony. And he's currently in jail trying to arrange bail. And the problem is that $35,000 is a lot of money to bail. It requires somebody to put up a house or large pieces of property or large sums of money. And there are people who are just, you know, they're willing to put up part of it, but they are hard-pressed to put up all of it. And for those who want to contribute to the bail or assist in this process, I encourage you to call the Huff line at 423-4833, 423-HUFF. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and also my voicemail. I'm not the primary person involved in this, but I am offering my voicemail to be of assistance and to connect people with the appropriate folks who are putting together the bail. And that's the situation. Jim is in Elmwood, and I believe he received one visitor yesterday. Another one was turned away. Carlos got in to see him, but Meg was not able to. And he's not a happy man, and he may not be a safe man in there. So give a call to 423-4833 if you want to put up your house. See, already there's a bail donation here of coming into the studio, small but mighty, or mighty small, depending on how you look at it. In any case, yeah, that's what's going on with Jim. And I wish I could give you more information. Let's turn back to City Council's last oral communication session. The next one will be Tuesday at 7 o'clock, and that'll be public comment period. The 7 o'clock session is unchanged in its time, whereas the other sessions are much earlier. 12:30 is the afternoon session. 11 o'clock is the redevelopment agency, where they're going to sell out the Dolphin Lee folks. And 9:30 is the closed session, where who knows what else, whatever they're doing. You can't really tell. 7 o'clock is the usual oral communication session. Let's hear some oral communications from the last City Council meeting. Not the best recording, but hopefully something you can hear.
Council members Robert Norris, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Regarding the porta potties at Camp Paradise, or a porta potty at Camp Paradise, whether Councilmember Crone took a whiz on the riverbank or not is not the real question here at all, but whether he and this council will keep their commitment of February 1999, when the task force to look into bathrooms and set up bathrooms downtown was established, to put in porta potties and sanitary facilities in well-used zones where campers are, legal or illegal. This, as Councilmember Riley well knows, since she's a member of this task force, has not been done. And it's 2.5 years later. So, of course, it's a public health matter, and it's also a matter of public policy, because homeless people face hostility, and they face kind of a slandering, because the City Council does not meet the elementary health needs that they themselves cannot so easily meet as those of us in homes. Again, this was unanimously passed over 2 years ago. And though there are 5 porta potties downtown, there are none where they are most needed. And that deals with 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people every night in the city who have no place to sleep and have no place to go to the bathroom, other than these 5 downtown areas, in case you want everybody to be trooping downtown to go to the bathroom. I don't know if that's what you want at night. Apparently, city staff, from what I hear, is still informing the at least 2 porta potty companies that Camp Paradise tried to hire to bring in a porta potty, and they did hire one for 2 weeks ago Saturday, as those who visited the camp know, that they cannot place a porta potty there because the city staff are claiming that this is city property and they will not be permitted on city property. If this council is sincere, and if particularly Council Member Crone is really concerned about the quality of life on the river and the quality of life in Camp Paradise, I assume he will direct the city staff to make clear that if they want to put in a porta potty there, they can do so. And that will happen after this oral communications period. Failure to provide these basic facilities last year, as well as a frenzied email campaign by 2 bigoted businesses and police misinformation, killed the safe sleeping zones. Even though they were an idea that had been worked on considerably by Mayor Sugar and his subcommittee at that time, I don't want to see the same controversy falsely create problems in Camp Paradise. Again, the council can show its good faith by demanding the city manager for life, Dick Wilson, earn his salary and carry out the resolution of the council February 1999. I mean, it seems to me that that is the least we can ask for here. Finally, a word about this gesture This gesture indicates that I believe the council in a particular action is acting in a repressive manner, as Mayor Fitzmaurice did last year, last meeting, when he would not allow Phil Baer to speak on the Tidelands issue. Thank you very much.
I would say that in record, I'm not sure what Mr. Norris is talking about, but I resent his innuendo, but it's like my love for collecting the big bucks, that kind of wise innuendo. Next speaker.
Well, I want to respond
to Councilmember Schroeder.
He's gone in here and done to see Kyle several times now, as well as other Nazi gestures, and I've said nothing. And now I'm saying something. I'm asking you to respond. If you have a difference with anybody up here on the dais, there is a better way of expressing it. There is a better way of doing it. Do not do it again.
Well, don't do it again.
Everybody in this community, and it makes you look like a Nazi. So don't do it anymore.
You're good.
And that was Councilmember Sugar and Vice Mayor and Acting Mayor Chris Krohn instructing me not to use the Sieg Heil or to show it to the City Council. Apparently, they cannot bear to see a mirror of what they are doing. And while I appreciate Mayor Sugar, or ex-Mayor Sugar, Councilmember Sugar's advice on this issue, since he is a part of the problem here, I hardly think he is unbiased and not really in a position to give that kind of advice. If you see someone acting in a Nazi-like manner and you give them the Nazi salute, that's a form of public criticism, and it's a very harsh one and a very sharp one, but it certainly is covered by the First Amendment. And Mayor Fitzmaurice's completely unjustified claims that he can censor that kind of stuff at City Council will have to be decided in the courts, I suppose. With me here, I hope, is Steve Argue, commentator on Free Radio Santa Cruz from 12 to 3 every Saturday, and also a man who has, gotten some input from both stuff on the streets and stuff. Somebody ticketed a tent up where you were living. What's going on here, Steve?
Yeah, it was actually the sheriff's department came in. Someone called the sheriff's department and said that this tent in the campground was ruining their view of the redwoods and the river, San Lorenzo River up there. This is the River Grove campground, and it includes tents and mobile homes and RVs as well. And these people complained. The sheriff's department came in and they red tagged the tent, so the tent had to be taken down. They said that apparently that the dimensions were too big, but what it really comes down to is here's a homeless person, or apparently homeless, I'm not really sure, who is legally camping, paying to be in the campground, and the sheriff's department actually came in and evicted him by doing that, by red tagging the tent.
In other words, it wasn't the camp management that was concerned. It was the sheriff's enforcing the aesthetic concerns of a neighbor?
Yeah. It's very strange.
You also reported something else was happening on Thursday when you were going to call into the show, but we couldn't get through to you. Do you remember what that was? Another incident that you say had happened. Something concerning an officer downtown, perhaps? Not sure, but I know you also mentioned today you heard a story of a man given a ticket or a citation for intent to urinate.
Intent to urinate in public.
If Fuhrer Fitzmaurice can punish speaking about his regime as fascist as a form of crime, because you can't call the existing mayor that's defaming the emperor while defaming the mayor. Certainly, I guess a police officer could say, we don't have to wait till you take a piss. You're intending to take a piss.
Yeah. And apparently this guy was diabetic. He didn't actually take a piss. And he needed a place to piss. And he got a ticket for thinking about taking a piss.
Now, you didn't see this. This was his story, right, Steve?
Yeah, I didn't see it. And
he was probably lying, right, Steve?
Well, I don't know why someone would make that up.
Defaming our police department, right, Steve?
Am I back on the witness stand with Kim Allen?
Step away from the podium.
Or was it Kim Allen? Not Allen.
We're remembering your old trial days 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. You know, it's like she asked me to answer a question. The question being, were we allowed to protest on May 22nd? And my answer was, no, we weren't, because we got beaten up and five people got put in jail. And she says, answer the question. I did answer the question, but I didn't answer it the way she wanted. And then the judge, Judge Attic, jumps in and instructs me to answer the question when I had already answered the question. And then that was used against me. The prosecutor turns to the jury and says, see, he's so unruly here. Just think what he's like when he's not being judged, when he's not in front of a jury.
I think the whole thing is clear, that you should have been jailed before the trial started, and probably that would have been better for all of us. But you then served 7 months in jail. What do you make of anything, any news on the Jim Costner affair? I know you've known Jim for a while.
I don't have anything that you probably don't, that you don't have. People need to support him. We need to get him out. Need to get that $1,000 bail together if we can. Though it's weird, you know, they keep changing things. It's like he's being held with no bail, really. I mean, you know, not being able to bail him out at all. You know, like he's some serial killer or something like that. Just for smashing the Columbus statue, they keep changing it around and the way they've jailed him again. But $1,000, we can get him out.
So, and for $1,000, I can go to Mexico and have a fine time. So you can make your choices. I mean, obviously, I need a vacation. Forget about Costner. Send your money to Norse. No, actually, send your money to, give a call to 423-HUFF, and I'll tell you just who to contact to get in touch with all the bail folks who are pooling their bucks to get Jim out of the big house. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I want to thank Steve for coming into the studio and doing his update. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Yes. And you, too, can do an update. Just pick up a phone, and now you're going to have to pay 50 cents to do it, and it's the truth. They're raising all the phone rates all over town. Pay phones will now be 50 cents a call. I think we may have to contact the Mad Hoser to talk to the Bell Telephone Company. Just kidding, folks. I would never, never in a million years suggest such a thing. Now, I mentioned I'd done an article for Street Spirit. Actually, Becky Johnson did the main article, and I kind of put some finishing touches on it for the update on Camp Paradise. I also wrote a civil rights update for the thing called the Street Sheet, which is the second San Francisco homeless newspaper, that is sold by homeless people on the streets. And I'm going to read you the story I wrote because it's pertinent. You probably know most of it, those of you who've been listening, but perhaps some of you don't know all of it. Santa Cruz, Camp Paradise lives. Camp Paradise, the ongoing experiment in peaceful homeless civil disobedience, has defied the edict of mayor, city manager, and police chief, and houses 20 to 40 houseless working people in tents. A clean and sober experiment next to the San Lorenzo River, Camp Paradise fired, then rehired its lawyer and successfully called on activists to resist a search-and-destroy operation organized by city bureaucrats and staff with paid homeless home wreckers on July 5th. In a creative brainstorm, Camp Paradise hired an environmental expert to help the camp draw up a pollution prevention plan. Dr. Khalil Abu Sabah suggested a study to determine the amount of garbage and hypodermic needles hauled away by campers and proposed a specific mobile environmental steward program. Some of the campers themselves may seek an environmental impact report, adding up costs of cleaning and maintaining the environment if they are driven away by police. City bureaucrats have reportedly pressured porta-potty companies to not locate temporary toilet facilities there, even though camp residents have paid for them and a neighbor has offered his property as a location. A key housed organizer, activist, and fundraiser for Camp Paradise, Jim Costner, who has brought at least a dozen supporters there, was jailed for the fourth time in San Jose in mid-July in vindictive legal maneuvers to punish him before trial for smashing the Columbus statue at San Jose City Hall. With community sentiment running strongly in their favor, Hostile elements of city council and the city bureaucracy are trying to drive a wedge between campers and their supporters by painting sympathetic activists as extremists. After a sharply favorable rejoinder to a bigoted local news story appearing in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, Homeless Resources Center officer Eric Seeley showed up at the camp with cameras and warnings, inviting homeless campers to call HRC for shelter. That's the Homeless Resources Center. Campers laughed and offered him their cellular phone, noting that they were accommodating homeless people that the HRC was turning away. Activists are urging campers to remain vigilant and not to trust the low-profile urgings of some city council members and attorneys. Local Green Party activists have taken up the cause, though still unwilling to openly criticize their, quote, green, unquote, mayor, Tim Fitzmaurice. Many now believe the camp could become the straw that breaks the back of the city's anti-homeless sleeping and camping bans, as the camp paradise model of a drug-free, clean, open camp willing to resist unjust laws spreads throughout the homeless community. Visit Camp Paradise by the side of the San Lorenzo River, go to Denny's Restaurant on Ocean Street, walk down Felker Street, bordering Denny's, to the river one block, turn right on the path that leads under the bridge and upriver, walk 500 yards, and meet the friendly illegals who do publicly what most homeless people in Santa Cruz must do privately. Leave a message at 831-423-HUFF or email campparadise@hotmail.com to contact them. If you're forming your own local Camp Paradise, let them know. Santa Barbara, legalized vehicular camping on the horizon. Activist writer Peter Marin reports that the county's Human Relations Commission in Santa Barbara has recommended by a 14-0 vote that the county legalize business and church parking lot use by the vehicular homeless, as well as provide empty government parking lots for nighttime use. City Council will vote on the issue in late July, and the County Board of Supes will act in August. The proposal combines a model used in Santa Cruz and Eugene, but goes beyond what is provided in both cities, where only a fraction of the homeless population sleeps legally at night. Marin reports a drop in the number of tickets, though city authorities are limiting the number of places homeless people can sleep by trimming trees and installing no trespass signs. We're making some quiet political headway in convincing people that living in vehicles is a housing necessity and not a crime against the community, concludes Peter Marin. It's utterly absurd that grown men and women should have to spend their time convincing community leaders of this. Former public defender Chief Glenn Maurer reports that after a case-by-case defense of each homeless camping ticket, police have generally backed off, though a recent police raid did politely disperse a longtime RV site, an RV site that in fact persuaded a lot of people that homeless could self-manage their own property and their own vehicles. Maurer is methodically appealing every camping case that he does not win in court. Less than 5% are lost. Nuff said Nancy McCready, a fighting homeless activist for more than 20 years in Santa Barbara, reports her Homeless Civil Rights Movement of Santa Barbara got a $5,000 grant to do a local civil rights project. McCready's Homes on Wheels group is distributing flyers. One states, "The UN has declared housing a human right. This vehicle is my home." A second reads, "Federal and state law recognizes emergency housing. What about our city?" A summer solstice parade featured Howe, homeless on wheels, and other homeless floats made up of shopping carts. McCready also reports documenting police abuses with the new CCROP, California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project form, a Food Not Bombs organization that has survived harassment, and a new police chief who is ticketing homeless people less. Santa Barbara has the distinction of being the only U.S. city where the sleeping ban portions of its camping ordinance were actually annulled by City Council, 1986 through 89, after a massive freeway blocking protest and a national Come to Santa Barbara, Go to Sleep, Go to Jail campaign organized by Mitch Snyder's Community for Creative Nonviolence in 1986. In the last few years, the city has not enforced the discredited sleeping ban but relied on its camping ban to harass vehicular residents and outdoor sleepers. Leave a message at Homes on Wheels, 805-886-4895. Got any tips on homeless civil rights activities? Contact Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse at rnorse@hotmail.com or Huff at 423-HUFF. That's the latest homeless civil rights update. You will read it next month in the Street Sheet out of San Francisco, but you heard it here first on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And the call-in number, if you want to catch me in the last 15 minutes of the show, is 427-3772.
Mr. Shearer, Mr. Crone, all of you people, sleeping in your backyards. You're going to have these people sleeping downtown on the mall. You're going to have these people sleeping down at the police department. Why don't you be nice to them? Give them a bathroom to go to the bathroom. Throw a shower in there. Help these people because, you know, they deserve it just like everybody else. I remember Jay, the guy that jumped off that rock where we jumped off. He came to visit me. He was a very nice kid. And I feel really bad, and I cried tears for him. But I also cried tears for that man that died on his wheelchair, Mr. Shager. All of you people, start being nice to people. Quit being mean. And don't be liars. Because that's the worst thing you do. He is a liar. And I'll tell you what, no matter what I've done in my life, I never lied. Thank you.
And we're on the line with an activist who's been working with the Jim Costner situation. Hi there.
Yeah, hello. Basically, I just wanted to mention what the situation is with trying to raise bail money. Basically, we do have $1,000 towards rolling over the $35,000 bond, which would basically need a new case number attached to it. And the paperwork processing would only cost $1,000. That's what the bail bondsman is willing to do. The catch is, at this point, that basically the people who would need to co-sign are a little bit reluctant to do it without having a little bit more financial backing than they have. I mean, I, for instance, might be able to put up my trailer, but I would need to be assured that my total liability wouldn't be more than what I'm willing to put in, which is about $14,000. So the proposal by Bernard and some other people was that we could have some sort of a joint account where we put in a total of $35,000, and that would be the way we would cover that liability. And basically, that's what we're willing to do at this point. So we need to raise an additional pledge of $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not entirely clear at this point whether we're going to need to do a bank account or just do IOUs, but some form of that commitment will have to be made, basically.
And this isn't money that will be lost, necessarily. It's money that simply will be held in account, and if Jim shows up for court, it'll all be returned, right?
Right. And there's no liability after if he has to pay for the statue, there's... That money will come out of Jim's pocket and will not come out of the bond, according to the bail bondsman. That we're not liable for him paying restitution.
Now, should people call you if they want to help out? I've already told them to call the Huff line. Would you like them to call you directly?
Yeah, they can call me at 475-2757.
475-2757 to talk to John. And if you can't remember that, try call the Huff line, and I'll call you back and give you that number. But it's 475-2757 if you want to contribute any money, which I guess will be held until September or October or something like that.
Yeah, right.
And that's $7,000 you're looking for?
Yeah, basically.
Hmm.
It doesn't sound like a lot, but that's the way we feel we need to do it right now.
Well, it's not a lot considering the total amount is $35,000. Yeah. That means you already have people who've offered $28,000 in collateral and cash.
Right.
Well, I appreciate that, John. Anything else you want to add?
And I've been trying to contact a couple of the Native American organizations to see what they have to say about it. One of them wasn't even aware that the statue had been obliterated.
Huh.
I'll send them a letter explaining the situation. They're going to meet in August sometime, and their tribal council thing, and see what they have to say about the whole situation.
Right.
That's about it, basically.
Well, thank you, John. And again, to help contribute to the Costner Defense Fund and the bail, I should say, security bond that will be coming back unless Jim makes a run for south of the border, which I don't expect he will.
Right.
475-2757 or 423-HUFF.
All right. Thanks a lot, Robert.
Thank you, John.
All right.
Two. Compton as the sun will rise, and politicians have lying eyes. As sure as suffering multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn. The rich will counsel you, wait your turn, in heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand. As soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore, count on nothing in life so well, that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell, they'll never enter the door. Clearly all that you need in life to be at peace in a world of strife, the company of a man or wife and lots of money in store. Life is simple and so complete, with faithful friends and some bread to eat, a solid roof and a room with heat and stocks and bonds galore. The rich will probably tell you nay, it's inner riches that really pay. The rich have always got lots to say as they watch their assets soar. Count on nothing in life so plain, the poor have water, the rich champagne. The market rises to this refrain, the rich will never be poor, the rich will never be poor. Sure as life is a strange affair, in need of some robust repair, the rich don't actually have to care, the rich will never be poor. Maybe people are all the same, but the rich are playing a different game. You take your chances and take your aim, you'll never even the score. The rich can't help it if life's unfair, the richer people they really care. They often mention it's hard to bear, they're burdened at their core. Some say no, but it's plain to see, the rich are different than you and me. The rich are different as they can be. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor.
Carol Denny, The Rich Will Never Be Poor, from an album of the same name. She sells it as a CD and as a tape, and it's got lots of good stuff. A lot of love songs and some good political songs, too. The rich will never be poor. And Free Radio Santa Cruz will never be rich. It's, however, your option to keep us surviving. And if you want to, send in $12 to Post Office Box 7507 in Santa Cruz to get Spurious Emissions. That's not a pornographic tape. That's a compilation of pirate songs for pirate radio. Carol Denny also does a wonderful pirate song that I've played a lot on this radio called... fuck the FCC. Screw the FCC, I believe it is. We don't wish to be too... Set Your Radio Free, actually, is the song. And maybe we'll play it before the end of the show. We're reaching the final minutes of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and I've heard promises that the V-Man is going to come in at 1:30, and who knows what he's got in mind. Off perhaps some kind of new male sex show. The V-Man is a very liberated man in many respects, and I was hoping he could possibly give us all some tips on how he's reached that perspective. But probably that'll have to wait till another show, and I'll simply get blasted for raising your hopes. Again, tomorrow morning or afternoon, I don't know when, the accessory dwelling units subcommittee of City Council meets. Call 420-5030 to find out where and when, if you want to be in the final input. If you dare to face Premack, Kennedy, and Porter alone in a room, because there probably won't be too many people at that meeting, but you can if you're interested in accessory dwelling units. Actually, tents and cars are the real accessory dwelling units these days, the more affordable ones, and they're, of course, completely illegal, and none of these three is doing diddly squat to decriminalize them. If you want to have a word on that subject with the City Council, the number to call is 420-5017, 420-5017. And you may have called them 100 times, but make it 101, just like the Dalmatians, 420-5017, and tell them, A, end the sleeping and camping bans, B, stop the harassment of Camp Paradise, and C, establish a real public process where the community can have some meaningful input into what's going on. It's my suggestion to you. If you want to contact me, I'm at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It's only a voicemail line, but I do listen to it faithfully, in fact, obsessively, throughout the day. So give me a call, and I will probably get back to you. begging for a company in contact. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. So I also have my usual series of num-nums to read on the air. Unfortunately, they aren't as well organized as I'd hoped. Perhaps I can do this anyway. I was going to talk about Christina Tafoya. You may remember this is the Hispanic woman, diminutive Hispanic woman, who was taken down in the Beach Flats area with her two friends around 12:30 at night when she was passing through the cement basketball courtish area outside the basketball courts, and then given a ticket for being in a park after dark, which was thrown out even by so police-loving a magistrate as referee meat grinder John Mulligan of the downstairs courtroom. The word courtroom is used laughingly since spoke to me. I actually ran into her in court, and I heard this terrible story about how the cops improperly searched her, held her down, verbally abused her, threatened her because she wanted to know the names of the officer she was with. They kept referring to officers as Sergeants Vogel and Clark, and they wouldn't tell her who the other officers were. They called over an officer of color to arrest her, since presumably she was a Hispanic woman, and they didn't want to have a white on Hispanic arrest. And she was cited again for this bogus being in a park after dark, where we're talking about a cement walkway through between two streets. And it was thrown out by the judge. Well, I took the case, as those of you who are regular listeners may know, both to the Citizens Police Review Board, as did she and her mother. And the Citizens Police Review Board came through with its totally unexpected finding. It upheld the police department on every single count and didn't find anything wrong with their process. The officers refused to identify themselves. When she went with a reporter, Sarah Phelan, to the talk to Sergeant McMahon to file a complaint, McMahon did not offer her any pictures so that she could identify the officers who had behaved badly towards her. Instead, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, when they were confronted with a similar complaint and the concern that Sergeants Clark and Vogel were the two sergeants named by Christina Tafoya, not that she recognized them, but that she heard their names spoken and people referring to others as Sergeants Clark and Vogel, they took up defense for Sergeants Clark and Vogel and had no interest whatsoever in investigating the case of Christina Tafoya and whether she as a woman was abused. They said they didn't mind sending a letter to the paper supporting the sergeants, but when they asked about Christina, they said that's not within our jurisdiction. Almost impossible to believe, but there you are. It happened in Santa Cruz. And I'm hoping that Sarah Phelan of the Metro will take further action on this story and do more investigative journalism, even though she got considerable flack from our old friend, Police Chief Black Badge Belcher, for doing so. And I guess, well, I'm hoping that Christina Tafoya will take further action, too. But I think I've heard that she's in a family way, and she's not really too inclined to get into this kind of struggle anymore. And people get tired. That's when you fight the police department and you get all these bogus agencies that are supposed to be helping you but are actually just simply exhausting you and ending up supporting the police department, you're not likely to be too encouraged by the situation. It's only fanatic extremists like myself who continue to persevere, and of course, I wouldn't believe anything I say. I mean, just ask Christopher Crone. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Let's hear what could be the closing song if the V-Man shows up on time.
Stand in a door. Jesus would be. He was so big. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's gotten colder. Maybe the people have changed. This town's concerned about hunger. If it's an ocean away, people don't mean to be heartless. But they don't know what to do. Gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's got the answer. Maybe they'll all go away if we just make it illegal. If we just make it illegal to be disabled or poor, maybe we finally won't have to think about them anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something.
That was Carol Denny, Failure to Disperse, Getting Ready for Christmas. And we have a caller who's going to be talking at City Council about Camp Paradise, but I guess you've got something else you want to talk about on free radio.
Yeah, I've been following the Christina...
DeFoya?
Yeah, DeFoya, and of course I read the news every week, and Sarah Phelan's, she's doing a great job as like a lone journalist here in town, isn't she? I mean,
yeah.
Boy, she's a valuable journalist. Metro, of course they've got so much to cover. Because the senile doesn't take anything seriously except what's good for them. Anyway, the question is, you said that the commission, I'm talking about the Christina case,
mm-hmm.
been following this. Now, did you say the commission, what was that, the commission against women against violence? Or
the commission for the prevention of violence, the commission for the prevention of violence against women, which is in the same offices as the Citizens Police Review Board. They're both at 915 Cedar Street.
Now, who picks these people? Cause I think
City council members, each one picks a member.
And how many are there on the board?
I think there's 7 on each board.
Well, that would be a good thing to start focusing on them. And they basically supported the cop because the cop said this and that was it, and they closed the case and that was it?
Well, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women didn't even look into the case. They just talked to their one police officer, Sergeant Clark, and they determined he wasn't involved, and that was enough for them, and they regarded her as discredited.
What do you mean their sergeant?
Well, he sits on their board. He's not an actual appointed member, but he's always up there on the dais with them. He is their staff.
And who chose him?
Probably the police department.
I'm so glad we have so much protection here in this town.
Right.
Can I throw this in? I went to Ann Simonton's Media Watch slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
It was packed. That's Love Nelson. And I'm going to get back to her about the statistic,
uh-huh.
but you know who Ann is, I'm sure.
I do.
The baloney queen.
Indeed. Ms. America.
I mean,
Myth
I saw
America.
Pictures of her wrapped in baloney, and it looked pretty good, being hauled out to jail 11 times for protesting...
many moons ago.
...sexuality sold. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
she said, she said that rape has increased in Santa Cruz in the last, I think, 4 or 5 years by over 50%. And this is not just, I think it's a nationwide trend.
Mm-hmm.
But was Christina assaulted by these police or just harassed?
No,
and
just,
that kind of
just
thing?
Harassed. She
didn't
report any assaults of that sort.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's plenty of women that are assaulted. I gotta go though,
okay. Because the V-man is here.
I'm sure the V-man's gonna tell us about what's going on in Italy. That's why we can talk about not
he
sex.
He's gonna
you
give
dirty,
you all the shit, man.
Bathrobe man.
V-man will crap all over
what
us.
What do you got under that bathrobe anyway?
We'll talk about that later.
Goodbye for Bathroom Spears Broadsides, and hello to the V-man. Give me a call at 831-423-4833 off times, and stay tuned.